The project Toolshed is it's a curatorial editorial project that will end up in a publication. But concretely on the ground, we have a tool library here in Hudson called Toolshed Exchange. And tool library functions just like you would think. It's a place where you can check out tools if you're a member. And so we're contributing some tools to this, to the effort on to plant some trees. We've actually purchased tools especially for this job. And that's part of what we want to be doing is be responsive to needs in the community as they come up. And then we'll collect, an arsenal of tools as mm-hmm. we go. And so we have some shovels and so on.
Perfect. Great. That's awesome.
I should probably go through my basement.
Yeah, do we accept donations for sure?
Good. Good.
Then I won't have to call you, Hillary, to borrow the wrench.
We could go. A little closer.
It's a little closer, yeah.
So, everyone's here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, shall we call this meeting to order?
Mm-hmm.
The meeting is called to order. One of the first things we need to discuss, or not discuss, I don't think, can I have a motion to accept the minutes from August and September, or we can do it separately if there's any objections to ganging them together.
I'll make a motion to accept August and September meeting minutes.
Okay. Does anybody object? Does everybody say yes?
Yes.
Cool. Good. Okay. There we are. Minutes accepted. The first thing on the agenda, we want to change it a little bit. I think that because Ed doesn't have a lot of time, and here's my alarm telling me to be in this meeting. Ed doesn't have a lot of time, and he just wanted to explain how Toolshed works and what his organization is about. And he is going to help us with tools for Arbor Day.
Yeah, and on an ongoing basis too. So, if you need tools. So, as I mentioned, the Toolshed Exchange is part of this larger project, and it's a membership basis. It's a sliding scale, voluntary membership basis. The basic membership fee is $20, but we accept all ranges. And if people give more, then we can support other memberships for other people. And once you're a member, you can check out tools. So in this case, I think, Britt, you were going to sign up as a member. Somebody was, and then that will enable us to check out tools for this event.
Ed, can the CAC be a member? Can an organization be a member?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's a question I'm addressing right now with counsel, with our lawyer. It's just we have to modify our normal agreement. The normal agreement is a one-to-one. Somebody takes responsibility. An individual takes responsibility for the tool. So we just need to modify that for that organization to take responsibility for the tool. So we just have to modify our normal agreement, which we don't have done yet, but for this event, we'll just check it out to one person.
And Ed, are you going to have a website, or is there some sort of an email system where you say, this coming Saturday, I'm going to need a weed whacker and a lopper? And
yeah, we have a website. I'll put it in the chat. chat is disabled, it looks like.
Yeah, I think that in city meetings, we don't have a lot of chatting, right, Tom?
No problem. Well, the website is toolshedexchange.org, all one word, Toolshed Exchange, spelled out just like you would think.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on Toolshed Exchange, at the top, there's a tab that says tools. You click on that and you get a database of our tools.
Oh, cool.
If you're a member, then you'll also be able to reserve. There'll be some additional functionality. Thanks, Britt. So there it is. And if you click on tools, you'll see what I'm talking about. And then if you're a member, there'll be an additional tab next to the tools. Actually, just go to tools first. Yeah. And then those are all the tools. And those are saying what we have in stock or what's reserved. If you're a member, there'll be an additional button that says reserve, and then you can see the calendar date, and you can actually enter in a calendar range for how long you want the tool. And then
So you're not
just open hours
and hoes.
Sorry?
You're not disheveled and hoes.
No, we got lots of stuff. And we're growing. And the idea is we want to be responsive to community needs. So we're growing this inventory. We just started in June. So we have a sort of foundational number of tools. And then we've been actively talking to about 25, 30 different nonprofits, hearing what they need and buying tools again before the end of the year. When Britt said that we need shovels, I went right out to Lowe's and got 5 shovels. So we have 5 shovels that haven't been entered into the system yet, or maybe they got entered in last night. But anyway, they're there. I'm going to check them out this event.
Well, I'm sorry, Ed. I don't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, no. So the last thing I was just going to say is we have open hours. So you reserve the tool and we have open hours Saturday from 9 to 1 and Monday from 5 to 7, but also by appointment. I'm on Union Street. The tool shed is actually located at Basilica Hudson on the south side of the Basilica Hudson campus in a green trailer there. Mm-hmm. And I'm just a couple blocks away. So if you couldn't make the open hours, I would be happy to make an appointment and get the tool for anybody who wanted it. And we're hiring too, right? If you know anyone who wants to work as a librarian, basically manning the store, we're looking for people.
So for Arbor Day, will you be able to bring the tools to Arbor Day, or do we have to arrange pickup?
No, I can bring them to Arbor Day. I'm going to volunteer anyway. So just to make it easy and streamlined, I can bring them.
Okay, cool.
But it would be great if someone else could check them out.
I will check them out, and I will make an account as soon as we find out if CIC can be an account. And we'll use $20 from our GoFundMe.
Is CIC a government entity, or what kind of entity is it?
Government.
Yeah, that could be additionally.
If not, I'll just spend $20. It's fine. I'm sure I can handle the cost.
But I'll ask our lawyer about I had a brief conversation about government entities today, and that might be additional sort of tricky thing we have to massage in the legal terms. But I'll look into it.
And I live in an apartment. I'm sure I could use tools. I don't have a tool shed like everyone else. So
I encourage anyone and everyone to become a member. Like, that's how we'll get more grants to support it. So if you like the idea, please become a member.
Cool. And then while we're on the topic of tools, Ed's only able to do one set of pruners and one set of lobbing shears. So if all the team leaders, being Tom, Marie, Hillary, me, or anyone else who's planning on coming, if you guys can bring another set of pruners, that would be great. Otherwise, we'd have to sort of ferry the pruners around.
I got a lot of loppers.
That's perfect, Tom. Bring them. Nice.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So I guess I have 5 shovels, one for each site. I'm actually trying to round up a few more shovels, cool. Just sort of borrowing them. So we'll have at least 5, but I think probably... hopefully we'll get to 10.
Michael has a
10. And I have 3, so I can bring over 3. We'll be good with,
that's on shovel. Cool.
I know it's not on the agenda, but Ed, you might be interested in what Marie learned this week about Lowe's and their donation program and grant program. They are very generous. You can probably go there without taking any money and get what you need.
Ed, you and I will have a chat.
Okay, thanks, Marie.
Yeah. I'll get in touch with you in the next couple of days, and I'll tell you what I know about Lowe's.
I really appreciate it.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, Lowe's donated all of the soil and mulch to this project, and they apparently are very easy about it. You don't have to write a big grant. You just... Marie will share her information with you, Ed. I think it could be really helpful.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
The other piece that we said we'd take responsibility for is getting a truck and some organizing some labor to get the tree. So that's a little outside Toolshed's purview, but just as a cooperative gesture, I'm happy to do that. I think we have a truck on hand, and I think I can find some labor.
That would be fabulous, and we have funds in the GoFundMe for that.
Which, can I just ask a quick question about that? My understanding is these trees, Hillary, Britt, you were saying they're 500 pounds each?
Probably, yeah. It's like a 2-foot by 3-foot root ball. Some are a little taller, like the pin oak is probably, the pin oak's probably a little, on the heavier side, might be 550, and maybe one of the smaller amelanchiers is maybe like 375. Like, they're heavy. They're big.
They're heavy. Yeah, they're heavy. So I think labor is important. We need to find labor, but also there is some, you know, savvy kind of way to do it that Britt seems to be able to communicate about how to get these off the truck.
Yeah, so the nursery will fork it into your truck. But we don't have forklifts here. And how do you get it out of the truck? You don't just roll the tree and drop it out of the bed because you're going to crack your root ball. It's a clay root ball. So whoever is going to go pick it up should bring like 2 6-inch by 1-inch boards. And you set them up like rails off the bed of the truck. And then you have people roll the root ball down the rails. Mm-hmm. And that way then the tree is safely from the elevation of the bed of the truck to the ground. And then from the ground, you ooch and roll it to the plant bed. But you can just leave it adjacent to the hole.
When is that happening exactly? When would the
tree? We're trying to either do it the night before, so the 15th, Friday the 15th, because the nursery closes at 4 o'clock. So depending on your crew member's availability, if he could pick it up by 4 o'clock on Friday, that's great. If not, the nursery opens at 7:30 a.m. on Saturday, and we can get it Saturday and just all be a bit of a buzz that morning with stress.
And we can drop it off on Friday evening as well.
It can sit there a night before. No one can steal these trees.
So it probably will take 2 trips, just the sheer weight of all 5 trees together. So it would probably be, Britt can go over those details about which ones could be more easily ganged together. I seem to remember that 3 are somewhat smaller.
Yeah, we have 4 ornamentals and 1 shade tree. So I would do the 1 shade tree with like 1 ornamental and then 3 ornamentals for 2 runs.
Yeah, I think, Hillary, didn't we have another subcommittee meeting on this yesterday with logistics? So maybe we need another committee meeting. So take it, you know, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we can figure all this out. I think that, and then we're not using up everybody's time for the details on this. Thanks, right. Rich. And was there anything else that you wanted to add, Ed, before we get into our regular agenda?
No, just happy to be part of it. I'm glad it's happening. So thanks, thanks for thinking of us and bringing us in.
Thank you. We've got your logo on the poster and on the back of the tag.
Thank you for that, too.
And I'm going to put you in our social media. And hopefully we can figure out a way to get Climate Smart Communities points off of you. So thank you.
Oh, great. That's even better. Great. All for it. Thank you.
Okay. And Ed, you should come to all CAC meetings that you would like. So I guess that's a good segue into what's happening with Climate Smart Communities.
Yeah, we had a meeting right before this. So this is a CAC marathon for us. But it's nothing compared to what you've been doing, Hillary, being involved with so many things and other people too. But yeah, so we just you know, worked on our spreadsheet. We are kind of narrowing in on like maybe, you know, 3 to 5 priority actions for each of us three subcommittee members to focus on. And that feels like a healthy start for now to, you know, for us sort of newbies diving into this process and the documentation. Yeah, so some are, you know, things that Michael has been involved with benchmarking and, you know, figuring out the primary steps of a greenhouse gas inventory, which is a really crucial part. Like, it's one of the, you know, top first steps, CSC stuff. And a couple of other things that are already underway, just making sure we get those documented so we get those points for what it's worth. And we've had a lot of conversation about the, you know, are we doing this more for the points, or are the points, you know, a reminder of, you know, or just like a, you know, a pat on the back for doing good things that we're going to do anyway. So we want to continue to have the conversation. Yeah, like when anyone comes and talks about any plan, any legislation, how can we also weave that in with climate smart communities?
And you also have a upcoming meeting to figure out where things stand with there's grant money that's still open.
I have a meeting with Jill tomorrow from the, I forget where she's from, but there's a, anyway, she works with the Climate Smart. There's also Clean Energy Communities in addition to Climate Smart Communities. So Clean Energy Communities, you just do the actions and they give you money. So, and there's lots of grant money available out there. So we'll go through with Jill on that to see where we stand and what funds are out there. But yeah, it's an ongoing, all of this is just an ongoing process that takes years.
When you get the money, can you use the money for some, for anything environmental, or is it money specifically for?
Well, it's approved by them and us, and you know, it's, there's various projects that you know, projects people have done in the past that they give as ideas, but they kind of like you know, corral you into
the right way to
various kind of. I mean, you can't just put on whatever you want. Yeah, I mean, right, because they ultimately approve how the money is spent too. You know, you get the funds and you give them a project proposal, they okay that, and then, you know, then they release the funds. But yeah.
Okay, cool. Right. That's awesome.
Right. So, but there's funds out there. So I'll know tomorrow, after the meeting tomorrow, with myself, Jill, and Michael Hoffman, I'll type up minutes and send them all out to everyone so we see where we are, what's available, what's out there. And like I said, there's lots of grants out there. Not many communities have even gone after them yet. So the money is still there.
Great. Well, thank you for doing that. I would generally really want to be at that meeting just to listen and learn, not to butt in. And I'm sorry that I can't tomorrow.
There'll be others. Don't worry.
You and Michael, you've got this.
And Tom. Well, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Okay. I guess I'm up next with the urban tree inventory. Everything is moving forward. I did the quarterly report on that. Got great input from Tom O'Dowd and team for additional information that went into additional historic information that went into the our street tree report that will be an addendum to the forester's management plan that he'll be creating for the forester, you know, that he's learned about Hudson and the trees that we currently have, and coming up with a management 5-year management plan. But there were to be two reports from citizens or citizen groups in Hudson. And so the CAC was to write a street tree report, and the Parks Conservancy was to write a parks report. And so those also went off to DEC this last week. And people are I've gotten good comments back from them about that street tree report. So Tom O'Dowd, thank you very much for your addition to that. It makes a difference. You know, I hesitated at first because Tom brought in a lot more of the history of Hudson before it was a city. And I was kind of like exhausted with going, you know, doing it, you know, the first two or the most recent 230 years. And I just was like, okay, this report is finally done. And he's like going, yeah, but what about the 10,000 years before? And I'm like going, okay, write it. It worked out really well. It was a great addition. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. I know you put in a lot of work and I was a last minute thing, but you know, I think it is important that we always think about the, you know, the social justice side of things too. And, you know, me bringing it up, hopefully was no judgment of you, you know?
No, I didn't take it that way because actually I've pushed for that in other cases myself. I think it was just, that was the right call. I do think that we're in a time that when we can, especially if we're making a document that is going to be, you know, a document for the city of Hudson, if there is a way to recognize, get in and start healing some long time injustice or, you know, just start changing the language of things, I think it's the right thing to do. So thank you.
Yeah. And I'll just throw out that Stephanie Monsu of, you know, Bindlestiff, she is working on this like land acknowledgement project.
Mm-hmm.
She's in touch with, you know, the tribe as it is now in Wisconsin.
Right.
One of their members who I think is now moving to this area.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's going to be more with that in the future, hopefully.
Okay, good. I think that our next thing on the agenda is Arbor Day, but I think that we've kind of all gone over that, and I did also send everybody the press release on that, and I hope that everybody here can attend on Saturday the 16th, and so the GoFundMe seemed to work out really nicely, which is good.
Is there anything for Arbor Day that we need from this group? Is there any outstanding items that we can use from this group?
I don't think so. I think that I had gone over our checklist. You know, and no, I don't think so. I did just briefly want to mention that in the last week I I wrote a grant application to the Arbor Day Foundation thinking of 2022, and their ask for grant applications was to be very focused on environmental justice area, and there was such a short window to get the work done that I pretty much just hunkered down and did it, selected just to focus on the second ward. And the grant, you know, I don't know, it could be a long shot. We might get it. And it is for $100,000, at least $50,000 would have to be used for plant and vegetation. Hopefully more than that would be spent on plant and vegetation, but it's very focused on being very community involved, community engaged in all of the planning process, people, the actual residents of the area, and then we would be more guiding for technical, Brit's knowledge about trees and appropriate trees for locations, but it's heavily involved in with residents of the second ward, so that could be quite a rewarding. It's a 2-year window for the grant, so the first 9 months you're just planning on reaching out and learning about the community and being with the community and letting the community teach you who they are and what their needs are and what they want, and then working out a plan together. So it could be a big challenge. It might not come to fruition, but that's out. And but the good thing is we find out within a month if we get it in law. So.
Thank you, Hillary, for doing all that. Yes.
Yeah, I was gonna say what Hillary's not mentioning is it was a 6 or 7 page grant, yeah, with pages and pages and pages of narrative. So thank you a million times over. It was a huge lift.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I think that, you know, it was a good exercise no matter what, because I think that we really got a lot of good information, if nothing pulled together. And if nothing else, we can just take a lot of that narrative and start thinking of other places that we could be applying for. I could see actually, you know, cutting the financial aspect of it down a bit, but doing a smaller project like they're suggesting and going to Lowe's, for example, and saying, Lowe's, we really want to improve this area that, you know, a lot of homes, there are very few trees. Homes need to be shaded, and we need traffic calming and everything else. And so we can use the work product in another way. If
absolutely. Yeah, no, it was great. Thank you, Hillary.
Sure. Sure. You know, the other thing that I don't know if Rebecca's on with us tonight. Is that you on the iPhone, Rebecca?
It doesn't look like it.
Okay. Rebecca wanted us to talk about the idling law, which I think we talked about at our last meeting. I think that in general, this group was in agreement that we would support an idling law. She wanted us to write a note, you know, an advisory kind of a note to the Common Council and Common Council President that we would support such a thing. I don't think we want to get into the details of how that should be written, you know, what the fine should be and the nitty gritty. That's what the Common Council works out in their meetings, I think. Tom, tell me if I'm off base there. But just that we support the concept.
Yeah. In fact, it's on the agenda for tomorrow night's legal committee.
Oh, good.
So
good.
Jeff Baker has been charged with writing, you know, beginning the process.
Right. So it would be useful for the CAC to just send a note to you and the Common Council that we support this in concept.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
A little FYI is that like something like this, like this idling law, gets us points with the climate smart communities.
How many?
Oh, that's very good.
Right. I mean, and other similar communities have written similar laws. So
yes, these, we know.
Everything is already out there if you need, yep, your name or whatever.
No, yeah. Rebecca has done a lot of the research on other communities. Sure. I don't know, but thank you.
Okay. Rebecca was also working on the takeout plastics. And putting together a flyer to go around to all of the restaurants and encourage the restaurants to not use plastic and take out containers and start to use biodegradable and compostable. And we had, Rebecca had worked on a concept flyer for that in the summer. And then David Konigsberg took on looking at the language and making it flow in a way that seemed to bring it together. And also, I think, David, tell me if I'm wrong, you volunteered the graphic services of your very talented wife to help on this?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk a little bit about it. I mean, basically, it's a flyer to restaurants, cafes, food shops, to reduce or eliminate plastic waste by moving to, I think, particularly biodegradable, but also compostable containers. And, you know, a lot of the restaurants in the city are already doing that. But it's, there's a lot that aren't. And, what we're trying to do here is to make it a little bit more understandable, give people a sense of why they should care, why recycling really doesn't happen with plastic, what the alternatives are and why they're better. There's a lot of public support for it. There's a bunch of research surveys that show that consumers are really, in many cases, they will decide to buy products or not based on whether the packaging and everything else is sustainable. Also, you know, looking at the difference between biodegradable and compostable, and finally, like, how to source. Which is actually not that hard. Ginsburg carries a lot of it. And also, how the city can help. The city's got a program that I don't quite know everything about what it actually does, but it helps helps it be a little bit more affordable, or helps businesses afford to make the switch. So this brochure basically puts it all in a nutshell and makes it, you know, easy to wrap, you know, for businesses to wrap their head around it, understand what the choices are, where to get it, and affordable for their business. And so I guess it's envisioned, right, Hillary, as a handout to all different food services businesses, whether restaurants, food shops, delis, cafes. Because, well, I mean, one of the things that's really interesting that came out in Rebecca's original draft was that there's a huge percentage of plastic waste, like 78%, I'm trying to put my hands on it, comes from food service businesses, you know, and that only 8% of plastic waste winds up being actually upcycled into, you know, something equal or better. And the rest of it gets burned. Gets trashed in landfills, burned, or sent overseas to some poor country where they then have to deal with the environmental consequences. So it's a push to make business in Hudson, especially since, you know, it's such a restaurant and food town that, you know, it's obvious that we produce a lot of plastic waste, and how do we get a handle on that and reduce it?
Well, thank you very much for working on that, Richard. Sure.
My pleasure.
Rebecca and Peg.
This is another Climate Smart Communities points opportunity.
Really? Good.
Wasn't a priority, I don't think, for us because it's low points, but, you know, they mentioned things like EPA's WasteWise program. So, I don't know. You've already done the research.
You'll take every point you can get.
Yeah. Yeah. Just grab them.
Yeah.
It feels like you're getting, like, LEED building credits, like you're going up from, you know, gold to platinum.
Yeah.
We have a long ways to go before we go from bronze to silver, so.
Okay. We're bronze now?
We're in bronze, which is basically, you know,
that's table stakes, right? Yeah.
It's a step above Iron Age.
David, can I just ask you a quick question about, I seem to recall the last meeting, well, a few meetings ago, we talked about this, and there is someone who does mobile composting for restaurants. Do you remember this? Does anybody remember this?
Well, including containers?
Yeah, they will pick, well, I don't know. I presume.
Well, because the thing about compostable containers is that you can't just take them and throw them in a compost heap. They're not immediately compostable. They have to be sent to a facility to have this done, and you as a merchant have to arrange for that.
Okay, all right.
So, if they do that, that would be a good addition to this flyer.
The distinction you're making is between a backyard compost and a commercial scale compost, and there is an outfit that goes down my alley at least once a week, and I have it written down someplace what the what the name of the company is, but they pick up organic waste at restaurants.
Right.
Yeah.
But do they pick up compostable containers? Or
I haven't looked into their detailed policies, but that's a good question to ask of the specifications, because a compost operation would have to be governing the places that are sourcing the material from and tell them exactly what they will accept and not.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will, if they're smart, have a very specific list of the compostables which meet a certain industry standard for mm-hmm. compostability, which not all of these supposedly compostable items do. So the company that does this will have covered that ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our overarching recommendation, at least, you know, from Rebecca's draft, and I kind of agree with it, is to go with biodegradable. One of the other issues that you deal with a restaurant or takeout is that if you can control where, you know, if stuff is consumed, if food is consumed on site and collected on site, then it works. But if you're doing takeout and people are just going all, you know, all over the city with their individual containers, it doesn't work. So, you know, because you don't have control over the collection.
Yep.
Well, are we kind of done with that topic for right now?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. The other thing, the solar ad hoc committee, we really don't have much because that RFEI is out, and we might have things to talk about when things come in. But right now, there's really not much on that. I just kept it on the agenda. And I don't know if anybody had, I didn't have time to do this, but did anybody have time to make any headway on the urban alternative energy planning paper, or, you know, doing a paper in four parts that we had all sort of divided up things that we were going to research, and I know I did not do my homework on that.
Did that include this? The stretch
code. Yeah. Did you happen to?
I did a little bit of research about stretch codes, and this is how I can sum it up, I guess. If there is a code on the books
mm-hmm.
that you could make a case, for example, that the city would have an interest in stretching codes around, say, the pipes that are laid to include the toilet that you installed, because it's a water conservation. The city has an interest in reducing the total amount of water that it uses. So you're stretching
right.
codes to include aspects or add-ons to the code. So mm-hmm. you would have to go through your various codes. What are your priorities? Do any of these codes that we currently have on the books, could they be stretched to include that? So we could look, for example, at something like water conservation and look at the city codes and what are some of the ways that you could potentially add stretch code to that as a recommendation, for example.
Another set of examples, if you can find, are, you know, ways in which cities have stretched code to include what could be alternative energy. I mean, at least for this paper, to include alternative energy capture.
I did not look at that.
No, oh, no. I mean, I don't think that anybody...
But I could. Well, somebody might be out there who's done it.
Yeah. I think that would be, for at least this topic, this project on alternative energy in the urban environment, that could be really, if somebody's already used stretch code to include things along those lines. Rich, were you going to say something?
Yeah, Stretch Code is also on Climate Smart. It's also
about a point angle.
It always is point, but the my point is that all these, not only are there points involved, but there's also documentation behind all this too. So I could just go back and say, hey, can you give us some Stretch Code examples, or you know how we can incorporate this? I mean, there's lots of things to keep in mind, like in terms, you know, even like the comprehensive, redoing the city's comprehensive plan, you know, there's mm-hmm. guidelines, green parking, green this, green that. So mm-hmm. they already have templates and documents on how to change the code to make it more green accessible. That so is. Stretch Code is one of them.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, we could ask around and see what they got.
Yeah, there's you. Quite a bit of literature available on the Stretch Code idea.
There is a lot of literature.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that have adopted it already, a lot of communities. It's a fairly common practice in most cities to adopt Stretch Codes. We might be just a little bit, kind of maybe slightly behind on the Stretch Code issue, but I think it's fairly common practice. At least the impression I got is that it's fairly common practice.
Right, because the National Building Code sets the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And individual communities can go beyond that, make it perhaps the standard for air exchange in a building from, you know, 20 cubic feet per hour to, you know, 10 cubic feet or whatever the number is, while you know, you're sticking within that category of air movement, which would then carry heat in and out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, can I just add to that, though, I do think when you're looking at Stretch Code, you have to build on existing code
right.
within the city. So it's not, you know, that may or may not be appropriate given existing code. Correct. So Stretch Code may not work for a lot of things, depending on what your baseline is.
Right.
Well, the baseline is universal.
Right, but I'm talking about individual, well, okay, you're right. Yes, you are correct.
And the individual part is the degree to which Hudson decides to go beyond.
Yep.
Britt, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I had 2 points. One is a question. Who writes the building code in Hudson? Is it the Common Council? Is it the code enforcer? Who writes building code here?
Well, the Common Council votes to adopt the state building code, which is a gesture of acceptance of a higher power.
Right.
That we now acknowledge and make sure that our code enforcement officer is trained, as they are incented to do anyway, to follow that code. And within the last couple of years, our code enforcement officer has taken additional training to be able to enforce a newly promulgated energy code for the U.S. and got trained on how to implement that. So that's the degree to which we are already where we're at. And any of these issues about stretching those codes would be decided individually by the city council.
So it is,
to pass a local law, which would add and give an element to an already existing chapter of the code.
Okay, so it is Common Council who adopts code or votes on code. So then I recall this from the meeting minutes of last month. Doesn't it make sense to certainly get, you know, our position on Stretch Codes established? But I think maybe the next step is to meet with Craig for code enforcement and have a conversation with him. That might be easier and more productive than drafting or coming up with a position almost like in a vacuum.
But yeah, that's kind of what I was saying too. It's like Climate Smart has templates that we could use.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So I can, we can go into it, like pull it up and see, and ask them and see what other communities have done. But yeah, there are templates out there for these types of codes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I would sketch it out first before you approach Craig.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Agreed.
Because he doesn't react well to hypotheticals.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah.
As most of us.
We want it to be a productive meeting. I was just trying to think the best way to advance this. Because I think we've kind of talked about it at two meetings. And it seems really cool. So like the next actionable item would probably be to get these templates. And yeah. Then...
I put it on my list for tomorrow when I talk to Jill about, to let us know what other communities have done in terms of what they've passed in terms of stretch code. So I'll pass all that information along to all of you.
Cool. Right. And I would think that if we can focus it on, at least for this time, or, this project of having it be based on alternative energy. I'm sorry, I think I need to drink more water. Alternative energy capture, in an urban environment. And once we start to learn how we can work in this way, we can definitely bring it into, as Marie said, water conservation and other issues. But I think that we really want to start addressing alternative energy options in an urban environment.
Cool. Thank you.
Does that make sense? I mean, you can disagree with me.
No, I don't have a problem.
Figure out next step to get this lifted off the idea pad.
Well, right. And I think that, since you're talking to Jill tomorrow, Rich and Michael Hoffman, that'll be great to just see what you can learn on that. Let's see. We can talk about it would just be very brief about the DRI. There's another topic that Ryan Wallace wanted to bring up tonight, and that's the CSO. But just briefly on the DRI arterial meeting, Britt had reached out to arterial in advance of their public meeting that they had to show their design and materials for the connectivity project in the Ridge District. And Britt had a very good conversation with them and shared some photographs and other things and was unable to attend the meeting. Britt was unable to attend the meeting where they presented to an audience in Hudson of the materials and the progress that they've made on the project. Unfortunately, it was only attended by how many of us were there, Michael Hoffman? Eight?
Yeah, that's about how many.
Yeah. And, it was the eight very engaged people, and there was a ninth person there. We won't even talk about that. It was, but they did bring materials. I was impressed with materials that they were suggesting to use, and they linked it back to what materials were historically here and the colors and the darkness and the qualities of sidewalks that were when all the sidewalks were slate and things like that. I thought that they had made good progress. I'm not sure, Michael, please chime in if you want to. How did you feel about that connectivity project and arterial's presentation? Unless I'm putting you on the spot.
No, that's totally fine. And I'm sorry for turning off my video. Internet my kaput. But I thought that they did really well in taking into consideration kind of the feedback that had been presented at the last in the meeting that was in July, I believe. I'm excited to see it start moving into the engineering phase now, and them to be able to address some of the more specific questions that were raised about, you know, that element of the project at the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We still don't know if we're going to be able to avoid having zebra stripes at all intersections, maybe reduced on Warren Street. But they are sort of an international safety symbol. But, you know, the progress was made. I think it was good.
Are you sustainability-wise that the granite cobbles have a better embodied energy and are a better choice for long-term maintenance? So hopefully they will reconsider the upfront costs of a material change to restriping every couple of years.
I totally agree with you, Britt.
Preaching to the choir.
Yeah. After our last meeting, I think it was, anyway, Third Ward Alderperson Ryan Wallace reached out to me and said, have you guys talked about CSO? Or something
all the time, that.
And so I just said, come, let's talk about it. I don't know where the city is on the combined sewer overflow. And I know that there was work to redesign.
Right.
At one point, Michael O'Hara, you were also commissioner at DPW back, but Ryan is very interested in figuring out what can be done to really push the project or whatever needs to be done along.
Yeah.
You want to speak to it?
Yeah, if I may, quick. First of all, thank you for all of the work that you do. I mean, it's a ridiculous brain trust that is on this call. thanks for having me here today. You know, when I look at what we do as a city, right, and where we focus projects like the DRI money on the waterfront, if the waterfront is so tied to all of the things that make Hudson great and that we know that we're going to be developing the waterfront, I paint that in my mind against the picture of, does everybody remember that 10-day streak that we had in July where it just did nothing but pour? There was one day where literally there were 8 or 9 dumps of raw sewage out of the sewage treatment plant into the North Bay. And that just goes into the water as well. And as somebody who likes to get on a kayak and loves to go boating on the river, it doesn't make for a very appetizing reason to want to go down to the waterfront. And I know that Rob Perry for years has been taking this project on to try to separate. We've also had inquiries, as Michael Hoffman can attest, from residents, in particular a few in my ward, that are on lines that have not yet been separated. And so when we end up in climate change induced heavier rains, these individuals are actually seeing combined sewage and stormwater coming up through basement connected drains to the mains in their houses. And I know all of the work that this team has done thus far in thinking of the ways that we can get more permeable surfaces to capture the water before it goes into those areas. And I'd love to find a way to work with you all to also look for the grants to accelerate any sort of separation of the two systems that the city can do. I mean, I come from the mindset that there's not one solution better than the other. It's going to take everything within that arsenal to combat climate change and more. And for the pure example of being able to keep that water out of residents' homes, you know, that's where I approach it from, to say, is this something that we could look to partner on in terms of grants that would be out there that could accelerate the separation of that and support DPW in that initiative? Let alone it just being cleaner for North Bay and some of even the, I don't want to call it tourism-based initiatives that are down there, but like I know there's been like an educational and a museum was debated around the Fergari camp and whatnot. So yes, you want to do all of that outside of the realm of human waste when possible.
Yes.
I think a big lift would be to get our parking lots
permeable surfaced
and cap and have large bio swales in the parking lot. So a good precedent, this is one of the benefits of being on the Zoom, is Grace Farms parking lot. Do you know that one?
No, I don't, sorry.
So I'm gonna just do a screen share really quickly. So this would be like a really good, this is a good example. So this is Grace Farms. I wonder if they have images of their parking lot, which might be a little tricky to find, but they have huge bioswales and permeable paving. And that would be the best. I'll stop share while I find the
image. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I worked for an energy company years ago, and we actually built a new headquarters that had all of those systems, including like 8 different energy systems on the building and whatnot. It was a showcase of like the what's possible. So I am familiar with it.
Yeah, I think that would be a really big lift because the parking lots are huge hardscape swaths versus like, obviously we're doing our tree planting initiative, but parking lots are a big amount of hardscape, which contributes to stormwater runoff.
I wonder if,
and that's,
you know, similar to how like solar, you know how similarly to solar estimation, they use like the GSI maps to calculate the surface area. Is there one that predicts exactly based on, you know, 1 inch, 2 inch, 3 inches of rain, like what in an idea like that entire surface area could collect? Because it would be great to be able to estimate how could we take a collective 3 feet of rainwater all of our square miles out of the equation by that. Hillary, I sparked something, I guess.
Oh, yes, I did. I do have something to share. I'm not sure if I can come up with it quickly enough. But yes, somebody did send me some information on that. I have to find out. That would be a really good question to ask. I can ask somebody at DEC to find out if there is that kind of a tool. That would be really interesting to get a hold of and know. And also to confirm the information that a friend sent me the other day, because it wasn't sourced, and I don't want to quote it or send it around since it wasn't sourced.
I just want to say, God, I love the idea too, because that is definitely an easier lift than tearing up the streets immediately to start separating. So it's a good step A in that aspect.
Yeah. So 2 points. The thing you're looking for, Hillary, is called Manning's formula or Manning's equation. So it is an equation that civil engineers or landscape architects calculate based off of the coefficient of friction and the size of the area and the storm. So it is something that design professionals calculate all the time. So we can...
Well, I know a great design professional.
I personally hate doing it. I'm going to show you an example of what Manning's formula looks like.
Yeah. No, you can send it to me after class.
Yeah.
The other part of the process would be to do a satellite image that calls out how much impermeable surface is served by the storm sewer system. So I've seen examples of that done in other cities, where you can identify that, and I'm sure you could focus in on different parts of the city that would then be correlated with what branch of the storm sewer system
serves it.
The other thing I would like to mention is we're talking about the hardscape of the Hudson Core urban area, but the suburbs of Hudson, up by the high school and so forth, count as well. And these are households which have lawns and a significant amount of space in which to capture their own rainfall, but for the most part, they don't. They just get it out of their property as quickly as possible. Kansas City, Missouri dealt with this problem a few years ago, and they developed a program they called 10,000 Rain Gardens. And the city encouraged the development of individual household arrangements where the gardens would be arranged with the appropriate plants and underlayment so as to capture a whole lot of the rainfall that hit that property, and gave classes on how to do it and so forth. So that's an interesting example.
And that piggybacks nicely off of our bioswale position paper.
Right. And also the rain garden, wanting to have rain gardens in the sidewalks along all of our sidewalks, and also the whole parking lot paper that we looked on.
Are those on the website, like the parking lot paper that I can go onto the city site and find the old ones up, or if you've got it handy, Hillary, could you send it to me?
Yeah, I think I'll just send. I can't remember if we got it up there or not. Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Connect it both to climate smart community points and also a goal we talked about with the green parking lot, you know, policy paper. We get points for, and also possibly, is it the CAC's goal or mission to turn these policy papers into policy? Because maybe, you know, pushing through a policy will have more teeth than just having a position on it.
This, I just wanted to admit, this might be one area that we could look at stretch code, for example. So I don't know enough about the construction codes that Michael was talking about, but I presume that they must cover, to some extent, parking lots.
Oh, yeah.
So code. There may be stretch codes that we could apply in that particular case. That's a really good example of where stretch code can work.
Actually, yes, and I have found a number of green codes in other communities, specifically on parking lots, and specifically that. Then I can also share those examples. But the question of is the overall plan to create policy? I think that we should encourage the Common Council to and the mayor's office to create policy around things like green parking lots, eco parking lots, and we are trying to push it.
We don't get the legislation goes through. I'm sorry, we don't get the points unless the legislation goes through.
Right. Oh, so it has to be legislation. It can't just be a policy.
Sometimes it depends. It depends. But the idea is that, you know, you actually, you know, change the code and the code goes into effect, whatever that code is,
right.
You know, and then they give you, I mean, that's the whole point, is to move these communities towards a greener future.
Well, so that's how you would do it. You would do it through stretch code, I presume. I mean, I think that most of this could be done through stretch code. You could make a recommendation. The code enforcement officer, we could sit down, review it with them, make a recommendation to the council once the code enforcement officer and the CAC have reviewed that document. And sorry, my husband's cooking, so I thought I would leave him out of the picture. And present it to the Common Council as a proposed stretch legislation, and then that would satisfy the climate smart communities, right?
I think that we're hoping, Tom DiPietro, you can jump in anytime you want, but I think that we were hoping that the idling law could be kind of low-hanging fruit. I think I'd asked you before, I don't know if it still would feel true. You thought that I think you felt that the Common Council would be open to eco parking lot legislation, that when people are
going to build or redo a parking lot that they would have to go buy a new eco parking lot.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think the political will would be there for these things. And, you know, we just have to put it together. And I think we are going in so many good directions simultaneously that some things got backburnered that should have been brought to full boil. So it is time to start bringing these issues to the Common Council so that they could turn it into legislation.
Yeah, I definitely don't want sewage going into people's houses. That's awful.
I don't want it in the North Bay or people's houses.
Oh, North Bay one
or
thing.
Or South Bay.
There, I mean, think about the other other implicated costs here. This one resident in particular, what you end up having to do is call for an emergency pump out. So that actually starts impacting the cost that we're paying for fire services, because the fire department, even if you call 911, HPD is alerted, they call HFD. HFD has to come and perform what's known as an emergency pump out. So there are continued associated costs that we are seeing with the direct impact of more rain from climate change. So this, while it's an investment on one front, it's an idea of, well, what are we going to be saving and not spending on the emergency calls and services that are being used to put a Band-Aid on the problem?
Yeah, I think large scale parking lots are really low hanging fruit to get started with.
Yes. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say police department, municipal lots, any of the big parking lots, we can start thinking how to green them and look for grants and climate smart points.
What? I can see that how we could be of service and aid to ways that, like Britt's talking about with parking lots, on the sort of larger scale engineering level grants about CSO and separation. I'm sure that you can get all the agreement you'd want out of the CAC. I'm not sure that we are the body or the brain trust that you, as you say, that would let Tom.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Perry has an ongoing, I mean, yeah. Grants, I mean, his department, he has handled that. And, you know, there's just a limit to how much you can ask for at a given time and how many grants you can have at a given time. Right. So, right. I mean, if Ryan wants to pursue it with Rob, that's fine to find out where it all stands.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is a long-term plan for doing it all.
Yeah, I thought that there was a long-term plan for doing it all. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where it currently is.
I have to speak with him on a couple of things this week anyway. So Hillary, I'll take an action item on that, get back to you.
Great. Thanks. I did have some interesting conversation with Mike Myers on that and the history of that, but just beginner conversation. So I didn't realize that it was at the point that some people, maybe it is happening in other wards also, but some people in the third ward were getting back up into their homes. Yeah, that's bad. Okay, were there other things? Was there new business anybody wanted to bring up? Anything exciting on social media, Tom? I haven't had time to ever look at it.
No. Yeah, I'm going to try to connect our Arbor Day tree planting to the Oakdale Friends of Oakdale work day, volunteer work day that's happening the same day, but they haven't given me a link yet or anything, so we'll see. But yeah, whenever there's something interesting that we're talking about, like the tool shed I put up already. I actually had to put it up and take it down because I screwed it up, but I put it back up. And you know, if there's something with the CSOs, Ryan, or you know, anything with solar, you know, just let me know. And I think the Arbor Day is the big thing we want to promote, but you know, you also want to like keep a buzz around our committee with continuous things.
Right. Right. Well, and also it's going into Climate Smart Week right after on the 17th. Is that October 17th starts Climate Smart Week?
Sounds right.
Yeah, it's something like that.
I'm going to have to jump off in a minute. Okay. I'm sorry.
I think we're all going to have to jump off. Do we need to talk about anything else or do we want to adjourn? Rich, would you like to make a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
Is there anybody who would not like to adjourn the meeting?
Come to Arbor Day, everyone. So October
16th. I'm going to reach out to you, Rich.
All right, good.
Okay, and thank you, Ryan and Ed, for joining us. That was great, and also Michael Hoffman. Okay.
What am I, chopped liver?
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for reminding me about the pandemic, Tom. I forgot all about
it. How could we forget Tom?
Michael Hoffman joined.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Tom DiPietro, for joining our meeting.